Wayfair's big sale is here. It's Way Day, and it's on now. For 4 days only, score up to 80% off all things home with free shipping on everything. Now through October 29th, score Wayfair's best deals, like up to 80% off area rugs, up to 60% off mattresses, up to 60% off bedroom furniture, and more exclusive doorbuster deals. So build your cart and shop Way Day starting October 26th at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
We are live. Salute, gentlemen. RVD podcast number 11. And we have got on the line 2025 back-to-back IBO world champion, Jacob Kluzars. What's going on, Jake? Yeah, so I don't even know why. I must have just forgot that you had won last year, too. So this is back-to-back, which is very impressive. Are these the only two times you've won it?
Yeah, in the pro class. I mean, I won it as a young adult.
Yeah.
And then the last two as a pro have been it.
Yeah, I mean, you've had a good run this season. I mean, your team, the Darton team, won the team event, right?
B3 team,
right? And that was you, Benny, Ryan, and
Yogoza.
Boy, that's a good team. Did you guys run away with that? I didn't even look at the standings.
No, we won by a point.
No kidding.
Yeah, I mean.
Who are you? I'm assuming, was it the Matthews team?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that must have come right down to the very end, then.
I think Benny told me he hit 8 out of his last 9 in Nelsonville to get a good score in. So, I mean, it really comes down to something like that.
Boy, I got to tell you, Benny shot good this year.
Yeah, quietly.
I mean, you're right, quietly. I mean, he kind of really was putting up some really good scores at both the ASA and the IBO all year long.
Yeah, and that's the tough thing. I mean, especially with these shoot-off platforms that we have, everybody sees the top 5 guys, but they don't really pay a whole lot of attention, unfortunately, to the guys that are an arrow away or 2 points out. Those guys shot awesome. They just don't get a lot of credit. And Benny is, he's always there.
No, Benny was there almost at every shoot this season. I seen his name near the top. I mean, you also were the Triple Crown winner this year, too. Which, I guess that was after Nelsonville. You had tied that up. But you also came – so you had a really solid IBO season this year.
Yeah, I mean, just consistent. I never did anything too lights out crazy, nothing too – never shot a round that I was, completely thrilled with, but I never shot a bad round either.
Well, I mean, that's it, right? I feel like that's the – I always thought that was the key to that class, right? A lot of the guys at the top, yourself included, are in the black both days, right? You're going to shoot, 6 up, 7 up on the first day, and you're still going to shoot 5 or 6 up the second day. You're not going to go backwards at any point, right? You may not have these monster – I shot with Justin Martin the second day in Franklin, and he shot 12 up. But – his first day didn't do him any favors, right? So I think there's something to be said about just the consistency of putting up a good plus round every day you're out there, right? You're probably going to find yourself at the top more than most.
Yeah, especially on the IBO side of things. I mean, you really don't need huge rounds. I mean, more times than not, if you're around 10 up, you're going to make the shoot-off.
I think you and I have talked about this before, and we may even have talked about it last week, but I've never shot any of the national ASA stuff, and I know you've been all over it. But for my money, I think that for unknown 3D archery, the IBO is the toughest game in town by far, I think. I think if you're shooting well at that unknown game, you are in a level above a lot of other guys, because I think that's just so hard to do, those IBO shoots.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, ASA courses and IBO courses aren't even comparable. ASA drives me crazy with that round because I think it's the least indicative of like a good shooting round. I could just miss the 12 by an eighth of an inch all day and walk off two up. And somebody that uses the whole 10 ring, shoots a couple eights, overjudges a bunch of stuff, underjudges some stuff, could come off the course at 14 up, and you're like, man, I was shooting so much better.
Yeah. I mean, because I feel like even at those, I mean, I've talked to enough guys that I was talking to somebody at Worlds. I can't remember who it was. It might have been Danny. And he was saying, like, at some of those shoots, if you can peg one target based on how they lay those targets out, the judging becomes infinitely easier because of the way they walk things back and forth. And I don't know if that's true or not because I've never been to one, but I've seen a bunch, and it does seem like how they lay out versus an IBO where we're just kind of Hansel and Gretling through the woods, never shooting on the same line as any target we had just previously shot.
Yeah, I mean, they're not – you can't even really compare them. ASA rounds are just goofy to me. I like them because it's a different skill set, but there's also a reason that – guys that start out in ASA have a harder time transitioning to IBOs than vice versa.
Well, I mean, we see that in real time. You know what I mean? I know a lot of guys that shoot in that pro class that shoot really exceptional at those ASAs, and it's just harder to, you know, I guess it depends on how you judge the targets or whatever, but a lot of those guys that are really good ASA shooters, kids that have won some of those events, struggle mightily at the IBO side of things. And I don't know if that's just because the targets are so much different to look at or just the ground is so much different to judge on. I'm sure it's probably a little bit of both, but you are right. I mean, it is definitely – those ASA guys sometimes do struggle up here, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's – I don't even know where to start to compare them. I just, if you're a ground judger in the ASA, nine times out of ten, you're going to be okay. I mean, occasionally you'll run into a target where they take some ground out of them, but it's not common. I mean, it's typically flat ground in wide open length.
So, do you train differently then? I mean, like, when you're at home practicing and you're carrying your mule deer on your back up and down your hill 1,000 times a week, moving it to practice judging yardage or whatever the hell you used to do there. When you're going to an ASA, are you training to judge different than you would an IBO, or is your practice the same across the board?
I tweak things a little bit. I won't practice as much on terrain leading into an ASA, and I'll make sure I'm in more of an open lane because I think that's what I'm going to see. I'll really practice my ground, working on the ground judging because I know I'm going to be able to use it. I still look at target size a lot because I don't know McKenzie's quite as well as Reinhardt's, so I still try to learn that every single time I'm looking at them. But I really fall back on my ground judging when I practice for ASA stuff because I know it's going to be available for me to use.
I mean, I guess if that's kind of how the lanes are cut. I mean, I know last week we didn't have a lot of opportunity to judge a lot of ground, I don't think. I can't think off the top of my head. Maybe there was out of 40, there might have been 10, maybe. I thought the second day last week was a lot harder look than the first day. Would you agree with that or disagree with that?
No, I would agree with that. The first day we all kind of agreed. We shot with Chance, Jacob Marlowe, and Sam Suter. And we had all kind of agreed that the first day wasn't an easy course, but there were targets there to hit. The points were there. You just had to get them. Where the second day, I didn't feel that way. I felt the second day was that was like a soul crusher.
I mean, you still the second day. I mean, Dalton and I, we were just going over the scores here, and I think almost everybody probably shot everybody at the top. All shot a little worse the second day, I think. But you must have finished seven up the second day.
Yep, seven up with 9-11.
So and the first day you were 9, right? So I mean, it's marginal, right? I mean, you two different targets. But I mean, it was like that uphill turkey the second day, and that was the hardest target of the weekend for me, was that uphill turkey. I thought the second day, like that black cat towards the end, I thought was also going to get a lot of guys.
Just going down the stretch of that, once you got to that uphill turkey, I mean, you go to, from a far uphill turkey to a fairly close gazelle, but still small 11.
Yep.
Kind of goofy looking target, and then you turn a corner to a 46, 47 yard coyote across a ravine, and you're just left scratching your head, like, when are they going to let it up? And then you get through the coyote, and then you walk into the lynx, our smallest target.
I like when Larry has got his hands on all these target ranges. Right? I mean, I know he doesn't do it at Nelsonville or Franklin, but to begin the season with him at Pipesem and to end it with his kind of his work at Worlds is always pretty nice because I think he puts some of the hardest sets together that we see, you know, for sure.
And reasonably hard, not like, hey, I'm going to stick a alligator out at 56 yards.
Oh, yeah, there's a difference between, like a couple years ago when we shot Franklin when everything was like 54 yards. There's a difference between that and what Larry does where, like you said, you're going to go 48, 49, 34 or something, back to 48, then maybe. I tell you, in our group, I think one of the hardest targets we shot the second day was at Hogzilla across that ravine. I shot a high 10 on it, just over the 11. But everybody else in my group shot that thing over the 10 for an 8. That thing looked like it was out there considerably further. I thought, like, our group had all had that thing probably 3 or 4 yards further away than what it probably was.
Well, yeah, I mean, because you're coming off of at least 3. I mean, you could count the gazelle as a small target. So let's say 4 fairly small to very small targets in a row. And then you walk up to one of the biggest ones we're going to shoot, and cross a ravine, cross the same ravine we've been shooting across, but from the other side, like a completely different look. I get how that would happen because you don't really think like he wasn't that much further than the lynx. Looking back on
He wasn't. No, he wasn't. He was probably 2 yards further than the lynx. I think. I mean, I think I had that lynx at like 41, maybe. I bet you that Hogzilla was probably 43.
Yeah, because I shot a low 10 on the lynx with 40, and then I shot a high 11 on Hogzilla with 44.
Yeah, and I bet, yeah. And guys in my group were running 46 at that Hogzilla like it was their job. I mean, but I could see it. I could see.
Yeah, you don't sit there when they tell you that and go, yeah, well, I don't know how you came up with that. Like, I mean, that's one of those things where knowing how to read, like listening to arrows is going to come in more handy than anything. Because if you're a ground judger on him, you're true.
So here's something I was wondering, and I was thinking about this while I was shooting. And I wonder, like, do you... When you see one of the guys, like you're shooting with Chance, right? And I've shot with Chance a few times. So if Chance runs out the top or runs one out the bottom, does that change maybe the way you're looking at that target based on if you guys have been hitting close most of the day? You know, will that for someone that shoots as good as Chance does, right? You know, like you could take the idea of maybe he made a bad shot is probably a very small percentage. So if he runs one out the top or bottom, you know, it's probably yarded. So do you think, oh, well, boy, we've been seeing things an awful lot the same for the entire round. Maybe I ought to add two or add one, or do you just do you block all that stuff out?
I try to. The thoughts definitely creep in a little bit. I mean, if anything happens to me more on something like like the Javelina we shot the first day, or the Wolverine we shot the first day. I use Wolverine as a better example because I saw this happen. Everybody kept hitting the Wolverine high.
Yep.
And I'm like, what are they looking at? And my first thought was I was sitting at the target before that looking at him going, everybody's shooting him for 50. They're all thinking 50. Or they're thinking close to it. And that's just the only thing I can think of. But when I walked up, I looked at it and went, yeah, I could see it. I see why they're doing it. I'm not gonna fall for that. So if there's a fine line between kind of going to school on a consistent pattern you're seeing, and then like if somebody comes at me with a random bull by, you know, man, maybe I should add to just to think. So like, If he just comes out at Wolverine and shoots a low weight, I don't think I'm going to add it to be like, yeah, make sure I get there.
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, you're definitely right on that, because when we shot that turkey the second day, I had to lead that thing, and we were not able to see the group ahead of us, but yeah. The group behind us, like, was Brady and Joe and Ryan. I don't remember who all was in that group right behind us. Benny, I think, was right behind us. And I would have, like, paid good money to watch a group shoot that target before I had to shoot it, because, like, we all struggled on that target. I think we shot maybe 110, 2/8, and a 5. And when they got up there, I think they shot 3/10 and an 8, you know, because they had – a lot of the guessing out of the way, right? I mean, on a target like that, I can see what you're saying, where it would be good to see at least a few arrows fly down there before you get in on it, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I think I saw four groups shoot that turkey, and I saw at least four or five all low.
Yep.
And I was like, there's no two ways about it. He's far, just how far is he? But I get what you're saying, because when I walked up to him, I had already watched enough groups shoot him. I heard arrows fly through him. I had everything I thought I needed, and I got to him and went, I don't want to shoot him for 50.
No.
I think I'm going to shoot high. And then I'm just like, man, everybody shot low. I mean, I saw more arrows in the white of his wing than I saw in the core.
If you were looking, then when I shot, that's exactly where my arrow landed, was in the white of the wing. That is for sure. I think I gave that thing like 48, and I kind of broke low into 10, and that did not get me home, for sure.
I mean, I walk up, and Marlo shot first on that target, and he shot, I don't know what he shot it for, I didn't ask, but he shot just over the 10 ring, and I went, yeah, I'm not
cool.
And, I think that's a tough shot to make. Even as good of a shooter as he is, that's just a miserable shot to make.
Well, I mean, that I thought the second day footing, I thought, was a lot better than the first day. But on that particular target, you were not just dealing with the target. You were also dealing with the footing and the angle, right? I mean, but I thought the second day footing was considerably better than what we had shot the first day, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it takes really bad footing to bother me.
Oh, yeah.
It has to be something completely out of, like, the ordinary. Don't get me wrong, there's times I'm uncomfortable, but I would have been uncomfortable on that target if he was perfectly level and we're standing on, like, a completely flat surface just because it's a 50-yard turkey.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, I'm kind of the same like you. I mean, listening to guys cry about footing, like, I understand the footing is bad, but I never get to a point where it's like I can't hold my boat steady or, you know, I'm like, it's an impossible thing to deal with, you know. So footing is relative, but I thought that the second day we were definitely a lot flatter, or at least in better positions than we were the first day. But I thought the second day, the judging was quite a bit harder. The second day, without a doubt.
Yeah, and with, like, the footing on the second day, it seemed like it was fine. And then when they decided to make the footing bad, they made it really bad. So, I mean, like, the first target, we're standing on that little rock mound shooting up the hill at that ramp.
Yeah.
Like, that. This isn't ideal.
Nope. That was a... as we were going up that side hill, I thought that was probably the toughest footing we had most of the day until we came around into that turkey. But I mean, that's what a world championship course I think should be like. I mean, it was hard, and you know, it was a good mix of distances.
Yeah, it's supposed to separate the pack. I mean, you're supposed to see who's having the best weekend.
Well, no, for sure. I mean, and like I said, the guys that finished at the top, there were no ties this year, right? It was five guys?
Yep, just five of us.
You came in, you were the one. Then who was behind you? Was it Levi?
McCarthy was second.
Levi, then Glenn, and then Jace. Yep, no ties. That was a long time it's been since there was no, like, not a pile of tie scores.
Right, and I think that is the type of course that would do that because there's just so – it's so easy to make a big mistake that will just separate scores completely.
Hey, I mean, look, I shot with Danny Evans, and I thought he shot great all weekend. First day he was 10 up. You know, same thing with Brady, right? I mean, those guys put up big numbers the first day. And, you know, it's like you got to keep on rolling, right? Because even if you shoot, there's not a lot of wiggle room there at the top, you know, and you shoot a couple down or maybe even, you find yourself on the outside looking in for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. Position after day one is the worst one to be in because you've got – everybody chasing you, and you're just sitting there trying to hold on.
So, when you shoot, was your game plan same first day, the same second day? Did you just go down there and think, all right, I'm just going to – were you any more aggressive the second day, knowing where you sat after the first day? Or are you just like, hey, same game plan, 40 targets, I'm going to go out there and shoot it and see what happens? Or do you get more aggressive – the second day, thinking you got to put up some kind of number?
No, I didn't. I basically did the same thing all weekend because it worked the first day, so I felt that I could just keep it going. But then the further we got into that round and looking at the type of course we had, we all agreed that there weren't going to be any huge scores coming off that course. No. So I just tried to – really, I just wanted to shoot a lot of 10s and catch an 11 here or there. I figured, and ending up on the first day, I figured if I could get to like 14, 15, I was pretty much guaranteed a spot in the shoot-off. So I didn't think I had to do too terribly much.
No, and at 16. So I was watching Sam had put the shoot-off on Facebook, and I was trying to catch it in between this and that. How close did that thing get for you?
Like, Danny passed me.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. At one point, you were not in the lead, right? That's what I thought I had seen.
Yeah, no, I think it was from the seventh target, he passed me, and then on the last target, I caught him.
Oh, yeah, that's good then. How was that range? Was it similar to what we've seen over the weekend or over the week?
Somewhat of a nightmare because the target, this is how it started. We started with a lynx, then we went to a wolverine, then we went to a coyote, then a turkey, and then a gazelle.
Oh, so awesome. So many 11s to shoot.
Right. I shot 5 10s in a row and was like, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah, so then I guess if someone runs into an 11 or two, they don't count the inside out as 12s during that, right? Like they do during the Triple Crown. It's just 11.
Yeah, just regular scoring.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm sure you're thinking, like, great, I just shot 5 10s. And if this guy runs into an 11 here or there, my lead gets nipped down, you know, a little here, a little there, a little here. Is that how Danny caught you or Dan caught you?
Yeah, pretty much. And then he tied me on the sixth target was a boar. He tied me. And then on the, I guess it would have been the eighth target, he caught me. The eighth target was a fallow deer, and I had to lead off. And I don't know what exactly I did, but I shot an eight straight left. And I don't know if I picked the wrong dot and aimed at it or made a really bad shot. I'm not really sure. And then he shot, I believe, an 11. I think I went to 3 points right there. That's where he caught me.
Huh. And then that was it. You guys had to go, like, out on the last two targets then. Did he tie you with that fallow deer, or did he get ahead of you?
No, we were tied going into the fallow deer.
Oh, so he took a three-point lead on you. So you gained up 4 points in the last two targets.
Really the last target, because our last target was, like, a 49 or 50-yard alligator, and he missed it.
Oh, holy moly. I didn't see that. I'll have to go back and review the footage.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was just a terrible draw for him to have to lead that target, especially in the situation. And just once he missed, I had, I think I had three other arrows to listen to. I pretty much pegged how far he was by that point. All I had to do was touch the target.
Well, that's good. Well, I mean, that's good. And it's a second world champion in a championship in a row. So, I mean, I'm trying to think today, how old are you? Because I remember when you came out of YMR and you came into semi-pro, which I fully agree with. A lot of these guys that are jumping right up into the pro class or whatever, I enjoyed the fact that you spent, what were you, in semi for two seasons? And then you moved up, right? Which everybody in semi was wondering what the hell you were doing down there, because you were just basically kicking our heads in for 2 years. But I thought he's like learning how to win down here, like, or whatever. But you spent two seasons in there, and then you've been in pro class since. So how old are you now?
26.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Yeah, many more world champions ahead of them, for sure. Well, I mean, I remember that Gator we had shot that 1 year at Worlds in Semi where you had gone out the bottom of that. And you were praying that you had knocked out and shot into the dirt. I think that year was probably the year you could have won Worlds in Semi.
That target cost me.
That one target, right?
Yeah, that
seems like it's like a billion years ago. I was just telling the guys, they're asking me about if I was excited to move up, and I thought, you know, like I was talking to you about when we were walking out. I'm like, oh, the thing of it is there's a lot of guys that I'll never get to shoot with again, you know. And I remember those like that target there when you had shot that gator, and I thought, man, that seemed like it was a million years ago, but I don't. could have been. Who the hell knows? I mean, you must have been just out of YMR.
Yeah, that was my first year in semi, and it was a while ago, but trust me, I still remember that like it was yesterday.
That was probably...
That still hurts a little.
Yeah, I mean, then you moved up the season after that.
Yeah, I took, because that was my first year, and I was happy with that year, but I thought I needed another year to sort of develop and...
I mean...
And try to just learn, because there's a huge learning curve, stepping 40 yards to 50 yards, and I mean, it's coming, but I shot good, but I didn't think I was ready. And then I took the next year to just really try to figure all my stuff out, get all my ducks in a row. Because the plan was always 2 years in semi and then jump up.
I'll be interested to see. I don't know. It was hard for me to keep track about how many guys use that rookie rule or whatever this year, that they could move up and shoot in a pro class, you know, or whatever it was. I wonder if some of those guys will stay up next season, or they'll choose to move back down. Because I think, to your point, I think there's something to be learned in some of them other classes before you move up. You know, I mean, now again, everybody shoots like you and Brady. You know what I mean? A lot of you guys are ready to move up the second you're out. But I think there is something to be said about learning how to win, learning how to judge at 50 yards, because it ain't easy.
Well, and I understand the mindset, because I talked to Brady about this when he came up. I said, we kind of compared notes of, like, I went to semi for a couple years and spent time there, and he came just to pro. And I said, listen, I went there to try to learn the game and not get completely destroyed. I went there to just develop my game. It's sort of like the minor leagues of baseball. They don't come out of high school and go right to the MLB. Can some of them do it? Maybe.
Well, I mean, I personally am glad you spent that 1 year in semi, because I got a fancy belt buckle from our team win that we had that 1 year with me, you, Sean, and Big Jeff. So, I mean, I'm not going to say you carried us the entire season, but you did. So, you're shooting dart.
Yep.
And you were shooting dart before it was cool to shoot dart.
Yeah, I shot him a long time ago.
I mean, a long time. I mean, it has been almost the entire time I've known you. I mean, I think you maybe had a Hoyt in your hand for a hot second, but it has been dart, right? And, what are you running now? I mean, you got one. What are you running now? Are you running a different bow for ASA and IBO versus indoor? What are your setups looking like with those darts?
No, I shot the same Sequel 35 all year. The same bow I had in Lancaster. I shoot the same bow from IBO to ASA. I shoot the same exact setup on all across the board on 3Ds.
So your speed is like 290 something?
294, 295.
Good for you. You're not one of these guys out there chasing the insane 305 or whatever the hell it is.
No, it was too much of a headache for me personally. It was too much of a headache for not enough gain. Because, I mean, 10 feet per second is nice, but if I'm going to shoot an 8 or a 5, I'm probably going to do it with the extra 10 feet per second. And I would rather just be able to set two bows up for the exact same and be able to use them kind of, if one goes down, I have another one ready to go. If once I'm shooting one bad, I can switch to the other one. Where years ago, I tried to play like, this is my IBO bow doing 305, here's my ASA bow doing 295, and it just became a hassle.
Well, I mean, like I said, you've been shooting them for such a long time, and now as they're gaining popularity, and as Randy has put the name out there more, I still feel like you are at the top of the list of the pro guys that have had those bows for the longest time. I mean, you were shooting those. You shot that coming out of YMR, a Darden, right?
Yeah, Yeah, I shot a Garten before Randy owned Garten.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true. You had before.
I switched to them in the end of 2017, so I shot them for the 2018-2019 season, and then I had gotten frustrated with the old ownership, and it was just stagnant, and I was just frustrated with some stuff. And Grant, part of that was being kind of young and not really knowing a whole lot about the way the things worked. And I, especially at that time, I just wanted changes made like fast, and I wanted to see things happen like right away. And I just, like I said, gotten frustrated and decided to kind of venture out and try some other stuff. I ended up with a Hoyt. I hit a Matthews for a little while.
Oh yeah, I remember. Yeah, I remember that Matthews. You had that for a hot second too. Yep.
Yeah, they didn't last long because I didn't really like them.
No, I know Vazzy had a
Pia. That was the year that we went over and shot the team shoot.
Is that when you had a Matthews? Did you have a Matthews at Kuchar shoot?
I did. I had a...
He was going back and forth between a couple of different brands.
Yeah, I had a Elon X there at one point, I think.
Oh, yeah, that is right. Yeah, that is correct. So, look, speaking of Sean's shoot, I mean, we only made it up there a couple times, and that was one of our favorite shoots to travel to. I know you had basically made a living on you and Todd beating people's heads in up there. But now is Todd is quasi taking that over for a year or so or something? Is that what I see?
I don't know exactly what's going on. I know it's moved to Todd's home club.
So Hudson Falls.
Yeah, I don't know how involved he is with it. I know the other guy that runs archery up there, Chuck Whedon, is pretty involved with the like putting it out on Facebook and
okay.
Doing all that stuff to get people to come. That was just a great send off for the year before we all kind of disappear for a few months while we're all hunting or just doing anything else.
Because I was going to ask you, and I know that I had seen Todd post something about the shoot, and I was wondering, like, what kind of involvement you might have, being how close you are with Todd. You know, I thought, well, I don't know. You know, those two, you know, if they're going to kind of put it up at Hudson Falls and they're going to kind of get involved. But it's another guy that's basically heading it up. Then.
Yeah, I mean, as far as me, I have zero involvement in it. I'm going to go shoot it, but probably just as like a walk-on. I'm probably just going to go bring my hunting bow and enjoy the day. Because I don't think Todd's going to be able to go. And
well, that sucks. That we're going to get Todd on here one of these days, but he seemed kind of he seemed a little sleepy at Worlds more than anything. I thought I caught him snapping on one of them chaise lounges outside of the podium stand there or something one day.
Yeah, he was. He's got a new job and he's just working a bunch, and it's an adjustment period for him.
Yeah. So, all right. So the season's over, right? You got a classic under your belt, Lancaster. What did you have, second in Minden this year? Is that second in Minden, second in Franklin, second in Nelsonville, IBO Worlds? What are you doing now? Do you fish like every one of these other knuckleheads? You being into crappie fishing?
Or, no.
That was quick.
Yeah. So you're getting ready for hunting.
Hey,
before we get on that, how cool is it to have your kid there for the IBO?
That was pretty sweet.
Right?
I had my wife and him walking the course.
Yeah. That had to be pretty damn awesome, I have to say.
Yeah, I was just kind of hoping he wouldn't have a full-blown meltdown because he's teething, so I didn't want to have I didn't want to have a whole episode out there, but he did awesome. He just kind of made some.
Well, no.
That was about it.
That's pretty cool. I always enjoyed like Glennie's kids were at Worlds. Both his kids were out there running around, and I got to see your kid out there. And I was wondering, I was like, man, Jacob probably had a pretty good friggin' weekend. Won Worlds, the wife, the kids out there. That had to be pretty sweet.
Yeah, it's definitely I keep saying this to people, and I don't think it's the right way to say it, but I keep saying I'm having so much more fun than I thought I was going to have, like, with a kid and being a dad.
Look.
That's the right way to say that, but...
Look, I've got three little... I don't know if you've ever seen my three little girls running around, but it is the best thing. It is the best, right? I mean, you're only in the infant stages of it, right? Wait till they could really cause some problems. Then you'll see how much fun it could be. I would love it if my girls were coming. Like, I would bring the whole family out to Worlds when it was in Seven Springs. And I don't know when they move it to this new place next year. I might bring them down. But, man, it is fun to have the whole family out there, for sure. I get it.
Yeah, it was definitely
Yeah, no. So what are you doing I know you like to hunt. I don't know. Are you like a crazy what do you got going on for hunting season? Are you like one of these crazy saddle guys? I mean, I don't know that you're like what are you doing?
No, I'm definitely not a crazy saddle guy. I shot one deer out of a saddle. I had to get one to try it just because I had to. Actually, my dad got into it, and he was telling me how much he liked it, and I thought for sure he was going to hate it.
I would have bet your dad would have hated a saddle.
Yeah, I just, like, when we talked about getting them, I was convinced I was going to love it, and he was going to hate it, and he absolutely loves it, and I could kind of take it or leave it. I think it has its place. I'm going to use it, but if I can put a regular lock on someplace, that's what I'm going to do.
I mean, are you like already, like, you've shut down now, right? Like, you're not trained, you're not practicing for anything else. You're basically, are you off for a few months now?
Yeah, I'm going to take a break. Especially this year with the kid, and we bought a house in April, so there's been a lot of things going on.
Oh, so many grown-up things to do, Jacob.
Yeah, it's cool, but it sucks. I hate having to be responsible for things.
That'll have to do us all, that's for sure.
But I'm going to take a break. It's been a long year.
Well, you had a hell of a year, man. I mean, Darton should be very proud that you are out there standing there in that red jersey as much as you do on them podiums, for sure.
I hope so. I mean, I don't plan on going anywhere from there. I plan on sticking with them as long as they want to keep me around.
Well, that's outstanding. All right, brother. Well, hey, I appreciate you jumping on here for a little bit, man. I don't know when the hell the next time I'm going to see you is. Probably not till Lancaster, so have a good fall. I'm sure I'll catch all your hunting posts. You do kill a pile of deer during the fall, at least a buck every year, it seems like.
Yeah,
I'll try to. Yeah. All right, man. Well, thank you, sir. Congratulations once again, brother.
Thanks, buddy. It was good talking to you.
All right. I'll see you, Jake. Bye. Yep.